Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's podcast, Ben Gulker and I talk about your 8-23 Detroit Pistons. We talk about Detroit's front court of the future, the unofficial beginning of trade rumor season, and how much teal is too much teal. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have a conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to be following DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. Pleased, as always, to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. How's it going, Ben?
Doing pretty good, Laz. Still hanging in there, watching the Detroit Pistons limp their way out of 2022, trying to get to 2023, winning one game a week pretty consistently here. Not so hard to call the wins when you only have to pick one, right, Laz?
Well, I mean, you've done a good job picking them over the last 3 weeks, so maybe it's easier for you than it is for me, for sure. Speaking of limping, though, we should start with the most relevant news that we got for the Pistons this week. Cade Cunningham officially done for the season, undergoing shin surgery. Troy Weaver, in comments to the media, made it sound like he would basically like recover in time for the end of the year and be able to go into the off season without having to worry about rehab, which is, I think, a positive development, but sounds like this is like a 3 to 4 month thing, but they don't want to like push him to try and return towards the end of the year. It absolutely sucks that this is the case, but I'm somewhat glad to finally get like closure on this one way or the other, Ben. But the ripple effects of what Cade Cunningham's injury means is what I'm more interested in. So for the rest of the season now, Killian Hayes is your full-time starting pointing guard. Jaden Ivey is your full-time starting off guard. It's like, what does this mean for those two? Though these two guys are probably the most directly impacted by this news.
Yeah, definitely. Successful surgery for Cade, obviously a good thing. Every time I've seen him jumping even a little bit on the sidelines, I've been like, Cade, stop. let's just make this stop. Make it end. I'm glad we have closure to that part of the process. But yeah, I mean, Killian, for him, I think this is, you know, in a silver lining sort of way, a good way for him. It's probably going to give him, you know, presumably, knock on wood, he stays healthy. It's going to give him the chance to give him his longest stretch as a starter without having to look over his shoulder and be in his natural role as he's been the last couple weeks. So that's a positive thing. Jaden Ivey, we'll have to see what this means for him. I mean, his minutes have been down the last 2 to 3 weeks because he's not fully in the doghouse, but at least a little bit in the doghouse, I think, due to some errors and mistakes and maybe not wanting to build bad habits, which is what we'll talk about. And Killian obviously earning the big minutes that he's been getting and earning some responsibilities in crunch time, right? I mean, taking over some games, pretty much winning some games, or at least sealing some games this week. I think kind of sealing some games would be more apt, at least in Charlotte. So yeah, some interesting stuff. Not the young backcourt we were expecting to see starting. But still, you know, at least if we're talking about rebuilding and restoring, at least we've got some young guys to talk about. And at least one of them is playing well right now. And hopefully Jaden Ivey. Hopefully this is a rough patch and not something long term, because certainly the last couple weeks haven't been going good for him.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good point for Killian to be able to play with the ball in his hands for the rest of the year without having to look over his shoulder. I think that will be beneficial for him. We talked so much about how confidence was such an important part of what we needed to see for Killian Hayes to make strides. And now that it seems he's found that confidence, it's like we get to maintain that momentum, which is good. I have every confidence that Jaden Ivey will turn things around, but yeah, it's been weirdly safe to say that like Killian has been better for Jaden that or been better than Jaden for like these last couple of weeks, which is not something I expected to say at all at any point during this season. But it's been true. But I do believe that Jaden will figure some things out. He works too hard, and I think he has the right mentality where he wants to shore up his issues and play better, especially defensively. I think defensively is where he could start. There's a lot of very simple things he could be doing defensively to just play better on that end. And I think that would, as we know, if you play better on defense, that will give you the trust of Dwayne Casey and the coaching staff. So that would be my advice to Jaden Ivey. To bring it back to Cade and being out for the year, though, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Ben, was so now that the Pistons are going to be without Cade for the rest of the year, they have been playing okay. Like we've mentioned, they've been able to manage and squeak out one game a week. Like we mentioned last week, they're now, what, like 2 wins ahead of where they were at this point last season. But they will be missing their best player for the rest of the season. Do we still expect them to be like the worst or second worst team in the NBA without Cade Cunningham?
Yeah, this is super interesting to me. So their net rating has gotten a lot better. If you look at some of the metrics that try to project wins and losses or expected wins and losses based on net rating, you'd expect them to be a little bit better by wins and losses based on their net rating. So they shouldn't be quite as bad as they've been, yet they continue to lose. So, you know, I don't think they should be quite as bad if over the long term, if they continue to be better based on net rating. So like a team that's consistently around like -4, -5 shouldn't be the worst team in the NBA. Like you look at the Rockets, you look at Charlotte, for example, you look at the Spurs who are just like plummeting. They shouldn't be as bad as those teams. If you give them 60 more games to play, like they should be a little bit better. So I expect them like those averages should play out and they should be a little better. They shouldn't be the bottom tier, bottom two, bottom three in the NBA. They should be a little bit better. So hopefully that's the case. However, they have these games where defensively they just don't show up. And when that happens, they just get blown out of the gym, or they lose games where offensively they play well, the defense just falls apart. So I hope they're not quite as bad. They shouldn't be. But, you know, young team's going to young team sometimes, and it can be really hard to predict. And the stats and the models that normally are pretty consistent and project pretty well, when you got young guys who young guy, the models don't always work.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, there are other really bad teams, right? The Spurs, the Rockets, the Hornets, who Steve Clifford's press conference after that loss to the Pistons was hilarious in my mind, but that's another thing for another day. I do think that if the Pistons continue to win, like if they continue to play as well they've played over the last like month or so, like I don't think they'll be like a bottom two team, but they also like won't be in danger of like making the play-in or anything crazy like that. But at the same time, it will be interesting if they keep this up. They'll finish with a better record than they did last season without Cade Cunningham. And that's going to open up some questions, I think, this offseason about what kind of team needs to be built moving forward. But that's a question for when they go over 23 wins. We'll save that for the end of the season. But I am appreciative of the fact that like they're continuing to play better basketball, it seems like, as the year progresses. Also on the secondary injury front, Isaiah Livers sadly re-aggravated his shoulder, and so he will be reevaluated in another 2 to 3 weeks. So Ben, 2 to 3 more weeks of Corey Joseph in the rotation. Yay.
It feels like destiny. Like Corey Joseph is life for the Pistons. Just
Kojo is inevitable.
He's inevitable.
let's talk about something that make both of us, I think, a little bit happier. And that's the success that the Pistons have found in the Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren front court. Over 140 minutes, that two-man pairing is averaging a positive net rating, which is tough because, like we've mentioned, the Pistons have been really bad to start the year. It's hard to find two-man units on the Pistons that have extended minutes and positive net ratings, so that's impressive. And a lot of that is being done defensively, which is really good to see. Their defensive rating, that two-man unit has a defensive rating of 109.3. That doesn't sound great, but it's 2 points better than the team's overall, or it's almost like 2.5 points better. Oh, wait, no. Ooh, I messed up. I missed a period, a colon in there. They have a defensive rating of 109.3. The team overall has a defensive rating of 117, not 111 like I thought it was, 117. So, yeah, that's a lot better defensively than the rest of the team has been. They're also, that two-man pairing is also almost shooting 60% as a true shooting percentage, or the Pistons are when those two guys are on the floor. Individually, those two guys have had just really impressive performances over the last couple of weeks. Ben, like, have the Pistons found their long-term front court of the future?
Laz, have they? I mean, okay, so Isaiah Stewart starting to do consistent shooting things, which is exciting. Still doing some awkward dribble things and some awkward travel things. But how about that poster dunk against Charlotte, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
off the wow, dribble. Right? Off the dribble poster dunk from the perimeter, like all the way dribbling all the way from the perimeter and putting someone on a poster, and then followed it up with the dunk in transition, like back-to-back possession dunks from Isaiah Stewart. Wow, right? Greg Kelser, I think it was the Charlotte game, made the comment, you know, we're seeing the evolution of Isaiah Stewart happen before our eyes. I think that's exactly what we're witnessing. Really fantastic to see. I think, too, Isaiah Stewart sort of giving Jalen Duren the path toward his own offensive evolution. Like, you can be patient. You don't have to do everything in your first year or even your second year, right? Like, it pays to be patient and develop slowly. And when your time is right, when your game is ready and it starts to mature, like, you can go ahead and wait, right? Like, do the things you're good at when you're a rookie, which is, for Duren, jump and dunk, and build the rest of your game slowly. Yeah, I'm starting to get, you know, really excited about this front court pairing. I'm so pleased to see Isaiah Stewart evolving and growing and maturing the offensive part of his game that, you know, everyone collectively was so concerned wouldn't get there, and then just all of a sudden has just sort of exploded onto the scene. Defensively is where the concerns have been for Stu at the four, I think. And, you know, the numbers you just read off, that's honestly a little surprising to me, because when I eyeball it, I still see things that don't feel like they look like they're working all that great. But, you know, that's encouraging to see. The numbers are starting to support some things that are working there as well. Of course, I think the rebounding probably helps some of that. Duren's doing a great job cleaning the defensive glass in particular. And obviously Stu gives you a second solid rebounder out there as well. So, yeah, I mean, definitely a ton of potential there for a future front court. Lots to be excited about. And I think, you know, those two guys, I think they give you a potential roadmap of how you can potentially build some winning, right? Like the Pistons, when you look at their previous success, you look at the Bad Boys, you look at the Going to Work Pistons, you know, their offenses weren't the thing that necessarily won, right? Neither of those teams were offensive juggernauts. They won through generating extra plays, dominating the paint, being really strong defensively. Now, are those two guys equivalent to Ben and Rashid? No. Are they equivalent to Rodman and Laimbeer, et cetera? No, not right now. They're not. But they sort of give you hints of, you know, being really, really good at giving you extra plays by being strong in the offensive glass, right? They give you hints of being versatile defensively, and they give you hints of, especially with Durin, dominating the defensive glass. And those are the sort of things, like, give your team extra plays so you don't have to be uber efficient offensively, right? By being good on the offensive glass, and really limit the opposition's ability to score by shutting off their ability to get offensive rebound and extra play. So I think maybe you start to get ideas about how you can build around, you know, those two guys. And that's exciting to think about, right? So all of this is premature, but certainly exciting to think about in a way that even a month ago, man, like, I wasn't thinking this way. So this is super exciting.
Yeah. I was glad that, again, we started this experiment earlier. I was fearful that this would take until like February. And so to see this, A, be implemented so early in the season, and B, have success like basically immediately, far exceeds my expectations for what these two guys would look like this season. You brought up a really great point about how Isaiah Stewart's continuing offensive evolution is opening up their ability to play both of these guys at the same time. Stewart is averaging 13 points and 7.5 rebounds as a starter. He's shooting 47% from three in the four games that those two have played in the starting lineup. He's shooting 45% from three in the 9 games he's played since he came back from the strained toe. And that 45% shooting, like, it doesn't look unsustainable, right? Like, teams were giving him wide open looks, and he started to hit those. And now the teams are starting to treat him like he can make those shots. And that's opening up a little bit of the off the dribble game that we talked about a little bit earlier. And it doesn't seem like the shot doesn't seem like it's he's getting lucky on like half of these shots. He's shooting like 4 or 5 threes a game. He's shooting no dip threes, right? He's emulating Bojan, where he's like just out there, like catching it at his chest and just like rising and firing from the corner. It's been just wild to see the evolution of the shooting confidence and the license to shoot that Isaiah Stewart has gotten. And to, you know, throw some more stats in the pile, Jalen Duren, he's averaging almost 9 points and 15 rebounds per game in his 4 games as a starter. Per like ESPN stats and info, I think the Pistons broadcast, like shout out to Austin Drake, also had this on the broadcast. He's the first teenager with 12 or more rebounds in 5 consecutive games since Dwight Howard. Like Dwight Howard, you know, future Hall of Famer, the type of player you like hoped and prayed Jalen Duren would evolve into. And so to already be compared in the same breath as him, at least statistically, is very impressive. It's like I don't want to get in my head ahead of myself. This is a really small sample. I do think a lot of the sample is helped by that game against Charlotte, where they scored 140 points and Jalen Duren almost had 20 rebounds, and Charlotte did not care about anything on defense. And so, you know, maybe a little bit of that offensive success is baked into that like one exceptional game, but it looks like their games fit together. At this point, it looks like their games fit together offensively with Stewart as the spacer and Duren as the rim rolling lob threat. It looks like their games fit together defensively with Stewart able to handle his own on the perimeter and Jalen Duren, that enabling Jalen Duren's defensive responsibilities to be like simplified a little bit, so he can just focus on cleaning the defensive glass and operating as a rim deterrent. Stewart also offering a little bit of rim protection from like as a helper and as a guy who is willing to just like box guys out, throw his body around and get defensive rebounds. It's like we talked so much, Ben, at the beginning of the year about how the Isaiah Stewart, Bojan Bogdanovic, Sadiq Bey starting lineup, like, just couldn't get enough rebounds, and how that was killing them in transition, and how that was killing them in terms of them losing the possession game. And you can see the power of just, like, not having to worry about that as much anymore, and what that means for this team defensively in that defensive rating. Now, that's not like an elite level defensive rating, right? Like, the 109, I think, would be like in the it'd be like in the teens, I think, in terms of like team defensive ratings long term. And with Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren starting, Marvin Bagley and Sadiq Bey are the two bigs off the bench, and we know that is not the best defensive pairing in the world. So I do think this team will continue to have nights where they struggle defensively. And, you know, we saw it against Sacramento. There will be stretches where the kids just aren't locked in and they're just giving up. I think they gave up 28 points in 6 minutes in that third quarter against the Kings.
Yeah.
So this is not a perfect pairing, and we should expect some growing pains. But the outline of what this could become is extremely clear and looks extremely positive, like, in my opinion. And it's not something I expected to see about this pairing, or something I expected to say about this pairing in, you know, December 18th. And so we should be just, I'm super happy with this. Like, we both loved Jalen Duren, but, like, this Jalen Duren's far outstripping my expectations for what I had for him for this season. And we both were kind of cautious about Stu, and Stu is way outstripping the expectations we had for him this season. And I think that's a big part of the reason why the Pistons have been so competitive, in recent weeks, as well as, like, you know, the contributions we talked about last week about the vets from Bojan and Burks, for sure.
Well, and that's, we haven't even started to even see Jalen Duren as an offensive player yet, right? And I think that's fine. I think that's appropriate. I think they're just letting him finish lobs, right? And they're not trying to push anything.
And he can still get, like, a double-double every other night just finishing
lobs. Exactly. Right? Exactly. And that's, you know, three or four dunks a game just because he can jump, right? I mean, Ivy's been finding him. Killian's been finding him. If he gets ahead in transition, he can get a dunk in transition. It's like three or four dunks. And then I think also there's some motivation for him to crash the offensive glass because they're not running plays for him, right? So you want to score, you got to go crash the glass, right? So that's, you know, that's pretty easy. 8-12 just because he is who he is as
a 19-year-old.
Yeah, as an 18-year-old, that's pretty incredible. And I think, you know, when they start, when his game is ready, we've seen flashes of a very good passer, right? So I think there's also some offensive potential, too, that maybe it's a year from now, maybe it's 2 years from now. All of that is yet to be seen. So there's potentially more down the road to be excited about as well.
No, absolutely. I also loved his comments after the Kings game about how defending Sabonis wasn't that hard. And it's like, he's 19 and he's already just like, yeah, it's not hard to guard this guy. And, like, you could tell he knew the scouting report, because in the first half, at least, he's doing a great job of just, like, sitting on Sabonis' left hand and making him work. And so that was great to see. But yeah, this Jalen Duren kid's gonna really be something, man. Both these guys are both in Stewart's like 21. I'm gonna talk about this for like 30 more minutes. So I'm gonna stop myself.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Oh, trade rumors. So December 15th is the date when newly signed players in the offseason can be traded. It's the unofficial like firing gun of the trade rumor season. And so we had a piece from James Edwards III of The Athletic kind of outlining what he had been hearing around the league in regards to the Pistons. The first thing I want to talk about, obviously, was Bojan Bogdanović, who is, I think, going to be the single most coveted Detroit Piston in trade talks. We know, or it's been reported, that the Lakers have offered a protected first-round pick for Bojan. Bojan dropped 38 on the Lakers, so I'm not surprised that they would offer a protected first-round pick for Bojan. But, Ben, I believe that protected pick would be in 2027. So do you want to trade, like, Kendrick Nunn, Patrick Beverley, and a kid who's currently a middle schooler for Bojan Bogdanović?
Well, that's starting to feel very interesting to me because my daughter attends a school that goes through eighth grade. So I see middle schoolers on a daily basis. And so, you know, it takes on a new perspective, right? No, I do not want to do that trade. Many reasons why. It's the Lakers. It's the LeBron Lakers, 2027. It's like, I think the Pistons timeline is like closer to 27 than it is to 2023, but that's still too far away, right? Like, I mean, a 2027 draft pick is like a 2030 realization, and I don't think you want to trade for 2030. But you know,
I've never heard it put like that before, but that's a great point. It's like this: if you draft a 18-year-old in 2027, they won't be good for another 3 years.
And that's too far away. That's too far down the path. You know, like I get. There's lots of ways to think about this. Here's my opinion on this: the Pistons are one of the worst teams in the NBA. They have been one of the worst teams in the NBA on purpose. I think when you've been in this situation for as long as the Pistons have been, even though they sort of kind of they did make the playoffs, even though they were no real threat with the Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond team a few years ago, I think Weaver has to continue to be sort of cold and calculating. And if I were him, like, nobody would be untouchable. I mean, obviously I would command a very extraordinarily high price for a guy like Cade Cunningham. I mean, he would be as close to untouchable as a guy would be, and the price would have to be an asset like a Cade Cunningham. Like, it would have to be an extraordinarily high price to get a Cade Cunningham, but no one's untouchable. Like, a guy like Bogey, like, he's carrying your offense right now, right? I mean, he's your best player. So if you're going to trade Bogey, you've got to be trading him for something that's going to contribute to your timeline in a very meaningful way, like in a year or in 2 years. You don't want something that's 8 years down the road. So, I think Bogey absolutely coveted asset this year. His contract is so team friendly next year that, I mean, the Lakers offer is just in no way going to be the best offer. I can't imagine. There will be something that's more tangible in the shorter term that will be, I think, on the table. I think there's an argument for not trading him at all, and I think that argument would make sense. My only concern about that argument is if you don't trade him at all and you just retain him through the length of the contract, I feel like it's going to be hard to just see him walk away and then not replace that with any sort of asset at all. Because I think, tell me if I'm wrong about this, Laz, but my feeling about this roster right now is you have to upgrade every single position on the team. And it's either through internal development or it's through bringing in new talent. I think we just talked about Stu and Duren. So I think those positions you're thinking you're going to upgrade through continued internal development, right? So you've got your 4 and your 5. Those guys are going to get better. But then you look at 1, 2, and 3. Okay, Cade, you're thinking internal development. Ivy, you're probably thinking internal development. So you've got 4 guys there, but I think you're still looking at, like, that leaves you 4, 5, 6 spots on the roster where you've got to get better. And it's not clear to me. Maybe Killian, you're still thinking internal development, but that still leaves you 5 spots. You got to get better. So I think you got to be looking at, how do I turn whatever assets I've got on my roster into future assets. And Bogey is clearly the best one you've got. So that's how I'd be looking at it. And I threw this out on Twitter earlier this week. Like, I've become like a, kind of attached to Bogey in a way that I normally don't, because he's just been like incredibly surprising to me. I think George and Greg talked about this on the broadcast this week. Like, I think because he was on the West Coast and kind of buried in Utah a little bit, I had no idea how versatile he was as a scorer. Like, he's just been incredibly surprising to me, and I've come to respect him tremendously as a player. So losing him would be, I mean, I'd be bummed to see him go, but at the same time, like, he's too good to rot away in Detroit. And the Pistons, I don't know, I feel like they have to figure out a way to turn him into something. So yeah, I don't think the Lakers trade is it, but at the same time, maybe this isn't the year to trade him, but I do think they're going to have to turn him into an asset that makes more sense for their timeline, if not this year, certainly next year, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right in that there's two like separate questions, right? It's like, should you accept the Lakers offer for Bojan? It's like, that's pretty clearly like, no, like they don't have the best offer you could get for Bojan. It's like, should you trade Bojan at all, like to the field? It's like, that is a more interesting question. Depends on the quality of offers you receive, but is also like not as completely off the table. I do think that there's an argument to be made that like, if you want to be good in the next like 1 to 2 years, which it does seem like the front office like wants to be good relatively soon in the future. I believe like this is year three for Troy Weaver. And generally, you don't get to keep your job if you win 20 or five or fewer games for four consecutive seasons.
Yeah.
And so, like, yes, I do think that he would like to show, like, the team to show improvement, like, relatively quickly. Having a veteran who is playing at the level that Bojan is playing at would make a lot of sense and help if you're trying to be good next season. With that said, like, Bojan will be like 35, 36 in the not too distant future and is already like not as good defensively as you would like a person who's going to be in your starting lineup to be, and is playing really well offensively, and we can't take anything away from that. But I do think that like there are more obvious clean fits for a like Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren, blank starting lineup. But like, will you be able to get those guys like anytime soon? It's like, I'm not so sure about that. The free agent class this year is awful, which is again part of the reason why I think Bojan's trade value is so high, because like he'd basically be like your free agent rental.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's just he's going to help the team in the immediate and in the short term, and the Pistons want to be better in the short term, maybe not necessarily in the immediate, but definitely like in the short term. And so I do think there's like a really good chance he sticks around, even as he remains like a very, very coveted asset among NBA teams. Now obviously, right, if someone wants to make you a ludicrous offer, right, if someone wants to like, I don't know, trade you a 22-year-old 3-and-D wing that's like already really established, I'm having trouble like even envisioning like who this player would be that's like available for Bojan. If Phoenix wanted to do like, hey, like we'll give you Mikal Bridges for Bojan Bogdanovic, like, sure, yeah, you do that. But that trade's probably not on the table. But if something like that is on the table, like, sure, you have a meeting about that, you have discussions about that. But yeah, but like short of that, there's no reason to trade Bojan just to trade him, right? You need to get something for him, and you need that something to help you be good in the short term and long term, hopefully. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think the scenario I worry about is, you know, let's say, you know, Cade, obviously successful surgery. He has a great off season. The Pistons retain Bojan, and then, you know, everyone has a great offseason, right? So all the young guys move forward, right? So the Pistons make it to close to the trade deadline, and they're fighting for the play-in, let's say, right? To me, that would be a good improvement. That would be a good improvement based on where they're at this season. You've got Boyan through next season, right? I mean, I think that's what this contract was, or do they have him for one more season?
This season, next season, right? And then the team option.
The team option with the partially guaranteed.
Yeah, the partial guarantee on the third season, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I guess maybe, yeah. So I guess maybe it's that. That's when maybe his contract value is still pretty high, right? So maybe this season maybe is not the most urgent. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, obviously his trade value is high now, but it could still also be as high a year from now, right? So that's what I'm trying to get to. My fear is if you wait like one more season and his, you know, he ages like milk, he gets old, he gets hurt. Like, if you wait too long and he just ages off his contract, I guess I'm just wondering, like, you know, you're re-upping all of your young guys at that point. You're eating into your cap space. I think you have to think of him as an asset at some point. I'm just not convinced you have to be thinking of him. Like, it's not a trade now situation, I guess. I think you have to think of him as an asset. It's just not. I think you've got 12 more months or more to be thinking of him like that. You just don't have to do it now, especially not with this Lakers offer, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. Other trade Pistons news. The Pistons, to my surprise, are not like slamming the phone down if you call them and ask about Sadiq Bey. Miami, it was allegedly interested, made a call about Sadiq Bey. Jake Fisher of Yahoo Sports reported that others teams are saying Detroit will part with Sadiq Bey for an unprotected first round pick. Now that's like double hearsay, right? Like, this is, you know, a reporter reporting that other teams are saying that, like, that's what Detroit wants. So like, that's like two steps removed from Troy Weaver. So we don't know about the veracity of that, but that sounds about right. Like, I would also consider moving basically anyone for an unprotected first round pick. And right. Sadiq will be extension eligible in the not too, I believe this offseason he'll be extension eligible. So, and he's a bench player now. We really love this Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren pairing. Like, Sadiq could be that third guy next to that, but like right now, Boyan's in the position over him. He's just been playing better and more efficient offensively. Ben, were you as surprised as I was that the Pistons were not slamming the phone down about Sadiq Bey?
You know, Laz, I think it was last week when you said, I'm just kind of ignoring or pretending Sadiq's rookie season doesn't exist, right? That sort of worldview shifted things for me. And I think if I do that too, it sort of recalibrates the way I'm thinking about Sadiq. And when I look at just last season and this season, I don't know, man. It sort of just lowers my expectations about Sadiq a little bit and makes me feel completely fine considering Sadiq as a trade piece. I mean, if Sadiq is like the bully ball, score off the dribble bench guy, the concern I have is like, what is somebody going to throw at him in restrictive free agency? And is Troy going to have like, you know, like, oh, this is my guy, I drafted him, do I have to match at all costs syndrome, right? Like, and I don't want him to do that. And not that he would, right? Like, I mean, he's moved on from Jeremy Grant, like, but at the same time, he's also gone after guys he liked in previous jobs, right? Like, he's gone after Hamidou Diallo, etc. So, yeah, I mean, he's got to be cold and calculating. That's the reality of it. That's a hard job. I don't know what Miami has to offer, though. I looked up and down Miami's roster, and I was like, you know, I bet they'd love to get rid of Nate Robinson, but I don't know that I want any part of that. That's exactly the kind of contract I don't want to give Sadiq Bey, to be perfectly honest. So yeah, man, Sadiq, it's tough. It's a tough situation with Sadiq right now. If he finds his 3-point shot for the rest of the season, it almost gets even harder because then you're like, "What? Who is Sadiq Bey? I don't even know."
He's shooting like 37% from three over his last like 7-8-ish games. And so, like, maybe the stroke is returning, and that does definitely make things interesting. But, yeah, Sadiq's restricted free agency is a huge factor in all of this. It does seem like they're really invested in Isaiah Stewart. It does seem like Killian Hayes is playing his way into a future investment. And if Sadiq Bey is quote unquote just like put his shoulder into you bucket getter guy off the bench, that's kind of replaceable in a way that like Stewart's versatility isn't, and in a way that Killian's versatility like probably is, but not at like as cheap a rate as you're going to get on Killian, considering how he's been playing for the first like 2 years of his career. I've really struggled with like what Sadiq's market is going to be. Guys you can squint at and call 3-and-D wings generally get overpaid in restricted free agency, simply because like you don't get a look at those guys very often. I've had you can see like teams start to like openly wonder like, oh, Sadiq's available. Like we got the Miami report, obviously. I've seen some Boston reporters be like, oh, like it's like, yeah, they could trade for Sadiq Bey. I don't know what they would give up, but like, yeah, that Sadiq Bey would be really interesting in Boston. I've had Golden State people be like, hey, like Sadiq Bey, like that'd be a really interesting piece to add around like their core of interesting young guys. And we know Troy likes James Wiseman, right? So like, would you do James Wiseman for Sadiq Bey? And I would not do that, but like I can see where their heads are at with that. But yeah, Sadiq is quietly going to have like a really, really interesting offseason for Detroit. And I hope he continues to play better, because that will solidify things a little bit more in his favor moving forward with the team. Last but not least on the trade, I mean, like there were some other trade rumor stuff, like teams are interested in Alec Burks, right? Like Alec Burks could definitely be traded. I think he's less valuable to this team than Boyan, but does definitely have a lot of offensive value and a very clearly defined role. I don't think you get as much for Burks as you would for Boyan, but like I also think the Pistons would like to keep Burks. He's also younger than Boyan, which helps. And it's like there's some questions about that, but like we'll keep an eye on that. But last but not least, like Nerlens Noel is like gonna get traded. Apparently, he's doing everything but like standing at midcourt with a sign that says like, "Please trade me to Dallas. Please trade me to Portland. Please trade me somewhere else so I don't have to be here." Ben, will you miss Nerlens Noel? It's like will we get the Trey Lyles Memorial thank you for your service salute to Nerlens Noel when he gets his way out the door?
I was kind of hoping Trey Lyles would get big minutes in the Sacramento game so we could talk about him one more time on the podcast. I forget Nerlens Noel is on the team, to be perfectly honest. It's kind of like Jahlil Okafor. I forgot he was on the team at times. I mean, Nerlens Noel, I mean, give any second round pick, I think. Any second round pick for Nerlens Noel, and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. And the extra roster spot that opens up is kind of interesting. The other thing I'll say is I don't want to take on any long-term money for Nerlens Noel. He makes $10 million. He's got the team option next year, which I'm sure they would decline at this point. So there's been thoughts about like a Nerlens Noel, like JaVale McGee, like trade of sorts. They make like roughly similar money, but JaVale has like two more years and a player option. And it's like, don't take on three years of JaVale McGee to get Nerlens Noel out of here. Like and I know cap space is not perhaps super valuable with this incoming free agent class, but like, let's not just take on like 2 years of bad money, like just to get a guy out of here. Like let's be responsible fiscally here, Troy.
No, I mean, he was basically like Jalen Duren insurance, right? Like you needed an NBA caliber big man in case Jalen Duren just wasn't ready, and Jalen Duren is ready. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad play by Weaver to have him on the roster. It's just that Jalen Duren's good. So move on.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, and there's also like very clearly a reason why New York didn't want him anymore. Right. Like,
right.
That $10 million is much more than I think he would earn in the open market. So
right.
Makes a lot of sense. Ben, what's been on your mind? What's been on your mind this week? Last couple weeks, you've been giving us gold, so I expect your greatness in this segment.
Well, I don't think I have gold. I have another color, Laz. And that is to say, this week, I was thinking of you during the Charlotte game when we were just swimming in the ocean of teal. We had the teal Pistons at the teal hive, and everyone was teal. And it was a teal celebration of defense, which I'm sure you also appreciated. So much defense being played in that overtime win. And I'm sure you hear the sarcasm. And I knew you had to love that game. So much defense being played in that beautiful color. And LaMelo Ball, just beautiful shot selection. I know you had to love that basketball game. So, no, that was something else, wasn't it?
That was a time.
That was something.
Half of LaMelo's shots, I'm still not sure how they go in.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And I think half the time he doesn't know either, and that makes it worse. I don't understand his game. It's like, aesthetically, like, it's very pleasing, and I understand, like, why you'd like it, but, like, man, he doesn't play any defense. He was coming off, like, an injury. He's been injured for, like, the last 2 weeks or whatever, so, like, yeah, sure, he's getting his feet wet again, but still, man. Like, yeah, LaMelo is just such a weird player.
It's like when you're playing NBA 2K and you accidentally hit the right trigger and hit the fadeaway. Like, that's like half his shots. Like, or the right, I'm not the right trigger, the right thumbstick instead of the circle or A button.
Right. He just does stuff, and sometimes it works. He's a savant. He's very much a savant. And I am not a savant, and so my brain doesn't work that way. So I don't get it. But like, to your point about the teal, I think now, to my eternal frustration, after that win against Charlotte, the teal uniforms are the only uniforms the Pistons are 500 or better in this season. There's a Twitter account that tracks the Pistons' record by uniform. I don't remember it off the top of my head. I will shout you out in the podcast notes. But yeah, the Pistons are over 500 when they wear the teal. And that's only going to incentivize them to wear the teal more. And I don't know how I feel about this. Because I like wins, Ben. I like wins, but I do not like the teal.
It was a very awkward... the two teals clashed with each other in a very awkward sort of way. I do have to say, though, I like the Hive court. The way that they have the wood actually look like a Hive. I thought that actually looked pretty sweet. Anyway, enough about Charlotte. Quick shout out to Mason Plumlee shooting left-handed free throws. I will say that if he can do that, there are no excuses for any NBA caliber big man to shoot 50% or less from the free throw line. If he can transition to shooting left-handed free throws, oh my goodness.
No, he's taken left-handed, like, live action jumpers.
Is he really? Oh my goodness.
There are, like, clips. You can see, like, the other team's bench reaction to, like, Mason Plumlee, like, putting up, like, a left-handed 12-footer and making it. And it's just, like, wonderment and befuddlement. And they're just so confused. So, yes.
Yeah.
I love this anecdote.
Wild stuff. Greg Kelser called it out, and I had to rewind because I was like, what? Did he really? And so I thought I would just give a little shout-out to Mason Plumlee, former Piston great. Last thing I'll mention, this is the only serious thing I have this week, and it's only semi-serious. Jaden Ivey missed 9 three-pointers this week. 4 of them were air balls. Unbelievable to me. 3 of them were short. 1 of them was an over-the-basket air ball that hit the backboard, and that was scary. Jaden Ivey, to me, shocked me early in the season with how good he was scoring the basketball. He was getting to the rim almost at will. And over the last 2.5 to 3 weeks, he has shocked me with how hesitant he has looked and how much almost like self-doubt he looks like he's having. Like, he looks so timid and almost scared to do the things he knows he's good at. He has gotten himself into really awkward situations. off the dribble. He has thrown himself up in the air with no real clear idea of what to do in the paint. And his three-point shot, it just looks disastrous. I mentioned this last week. I feel like the scout is out on him. And he just looks like he has no confidence or belief in his three-point shot. And, you know, I do think this is a short-term issue for him. You know, one of the things you had in the notes, Les, that we didn't necessarily talk about, you know, his minutes have been way down. I think Casey made some public comments about developing but not developing bad habits. I think maybe some of that is directed at Jaden Ivey, and maybe not maybe, pretty clearly. His minutes have been down. They were down even more this week than they were the week previously. Part of that is because Alec Burks was so good, particularly in Charlotte. Overtime was particularly poignant. Ivy played for like the first 2.5 minutes of overtime, was really bad. Burks came in and scored literally within seconds to pretty much seal the deal. That had to be rough for Jaden. Jaden, then I think, did he foul out in Sacramento? One of his worst.
He and Killian combined for like 11 fouls as a backcourt against Sacramento.
Yeah, that was, I think, Sacramento might have been his lowest scoring game as a rookie. I think he only had 5 points. Mm-hmm. Really, really tough week for Jaden. So, you know, I think, you know, he shot, you know, 2 for 11 from three. Jaden's got some stuff to figure out. And I think the coaching staff has some stuff to figure out as well, because I think he's at a point in his rookie season where, Laz, I think you're right. He's a coach's son. He's got a work ethic that reminds me of like every coach's kid you've ever seen, like scrappy, work hard, play hard kind of a kid. But I think every young player reaches a point in their, you know, their first few seasons at any level, you know, young high school players, young college players, young professional players, they run into this point where things don't go well. And I think confidence, retaining your confidence is critical. I think we've seen this with Killian. He's, mm-hmm. I think, gone over the hump this season, and hopefully it stays there. I think the coaching staff has a key moment with Jaden Ivey where you have to walk the line very carefully. You need to hold him accountable for some of the errors he's made, especially defensively and then with turnovers, but you also have to do it in a way that retains his confidence, because I think what we've seen from him, particularly offensively, hints to me that his confidence is low. So that's what's on my mind this week. Jaden Ivey is really struggling. I think he has some incredible physical tools. I think he's got some incredible raw talent. And I think the coaching staff needs to be really careful right now, because I think there's an inflection point for him, not for his career necessarily, but I think for this season where, you know, I think if the Pistons want to continue to be better than they were a season ago, Jaden Ivey needs to be part of that equation. And I think if the Pistons want to be good next season, whatever good means, Jaden Ivey's got to be part of that as well. So I think they need to work with him on confidence and getting him back on track, because he hasn't been good the last 2 or 3 weeks, and he can certainly be better, because we saw it. We saw him be very good the first, you know, 3-4 weeks of the season.
I wonder about hierarchy, right? Mm-hmm. Stewart's current involvement in the offense was not the same level of involvement we saw when Jaden Ivey was playing better basketball. Boyan is obviously, you know, 1A, 1B in the offensive hierarchy for the starting lineup. Cade made a big effort. Remember, we were complaining about Cade's effort to get Jaden involved in the offense early in the season. Killian is not making that same effort, but we were more concerned about Killian's confidence and him finding his place offensively. And so perhaps Jaden is struggling with where he feels like he needs to be in the hierarchy of the starting lineup. I have every confidence he will figure it out. The shot is a thing I do worry about, just because it seems like the touch is like fine, but the form, the technique is like not great. And this has been a thing that we've been on since like the pre-draft process. But the athletic gifts are too great for him to not figure it out at some higher baseline level than what we're currently seeing. And so I think Jaden Ivey figures it out. It might be sometime later this season. It might be in year two. We are at like the 30-ish game mark. This is like roughly probably as many minutes and as many games as he played last season.
Rookie so, wall.
Yeah, the rookie wall is definitely an oncoming object in his future. So I think that has part of it to do with it as well. And he also I tweeted like he falls like a Looney Tunes character. And, like,
oh my gosh.
He takes a lot of punishment
all the time
for a guy who attacks as much as he do. And I'm sure like he missed a couple of games with the knee strain. Like I'm sure he's, you know, probably not feeling as great as he was at the beginning of the season, but learning to get through that and fight through that is part of like that transition from college to the NBA. And, you know, that's just a thing like rookies go through. So I'm not worried about Jaden Ivey in the long term, but I can definitely say like, yeah, he hasn't been great in the short term. I mentioned earlier, like Killian's been playing better than him. And that's not something I would have expected to say at like any point this season. So it is what it is. All right, Ben, the schedule this week, they play Brooklyn at home later tonight. Then they play Tuesday against the Utah Jazz at home. They have a back-to-back in Philadelphia on Wednesday. And then they play the Hawks in Atlanta on Friday. So, Ben, you're 3-for-3 over the last 3 weeks. It's like, what Swami Ben, Nostradabin. Like, what do you got for us this week?
All right, I'm going for the season sweep against the former Pistons kryptonite, Utah Jazz. Kelly Olynyk and the Jazz are not going to split with the Pistons. Pistons going to beat the Jazz. I don't like that back-to-back stuff against Philly and the Hawks. I don't want any part of that. And Brooklyn, unless they risk another fine from the league and rest, you know, 80% of their roster, I think they're too much for the Pistons. So yeah, I like the Jazz this week.
That's a good call. I wish Cade was healthy for this game, because it does seem like he and KD have like kind of a thing, and like that would be fun to watch. Even it's like if you're going to lose, like at least make it fun with those two guys like duking it out. But yeah, the Jazz just beat the Pelicans, so I hope you're right. Pelicans are really really good, and they're top of the West, so I absolutely hope you're right, Ben. I'm not gonna go against you. I'm also gonna say the Jazz. Like, let's ride this winning streak together for sure.
It could just be an 0-4 kind of week. I mean,
it could totally be. They play Orlando at home pretty soon, so that, you know, I'm not afraid of like a long losing streak, but yeah, this could be an 0-4 week. All right, Ben. Let the people know what's the best way for us to talk about Jaden Ivey struggles in a format that doesn't get us yelled at.
Yeah, so maybe the game threads this week, if I stay awake and watch games live, that would be
all East Coast games.
All East Coast games. Yeah, that's true. Lately, it's been getting the kids to bed that has prevented me from watching live, because I don't like jumping in halfway through the game. So I've mostly given up on Twitter for the time being for my own reasons. So GameThreads@DetroitBadBoys.com is the best place. Or, you know, catch me on the podcast post, DetroitBadBoys.com as well.
Yeah. We are also like currently undergoing a slight sleep regression, which is just what you want right before a long trip to a different state in a different sleeping environment, yeah. Right? Like that's exactly what you want. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, and we're hopping time zones for the holidays too. So
yeah,
it's always perfect. Well,
we don't have to do that, at least. That's good. Yeah. I am also tweeting less, not because of Twitter stuff, but just I've find myself more busy with other things in my life. But if you want to talk to me about basketball, the best place to do that is still Twitter. You can follow me at Laz Chance. That's at LAZCHANCE. I've also tried to be a little bit more active in the boards on the podcast comments, in some of the post game recap comments. Those are some very fun, very reactive, very volatile environment to talk basketball, but I'm enjoying it so far. And things are continue to go well for our Detroit Pistons this week. All right, y'all. This has been the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And we will talk to you all. We will talk to you all next week. We will record at least one episode, like, over the holiday. Not on Christmas, because we're not maniacs, but one episode over the holidays sometime, I promise. And we will see you then.